973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
What'd
I do?
Turn around.
Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time. We just found out that we've been on the air for 18 years, Martine and I. And in that 18-year period, we only missed four shows. We only missed four. We were getting open to what we call the grapevine. The grapevine is information that you can use. Hey, this is WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. It still arrives, 48 years, Friday, April the 25th, 2025, from 6:30 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds, 7400 Greenway Center Drive in Greenbelt, Maryland. Dinner included, cash bar, and dress spring chic. That's WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. And also, protect D.C. home rule and save federal jobs and services. Support our D.C. neighborhoods. D.C. Emancipation Day, speak out. Standing together to fight the power. Metropolitan AME Church, Wednesday, April the 16th, 2025. Food served at 5:30 p.m. and the program begins at 8 p.m. And Martine and I is on the program to be one of the speakers.
6 p.m.
At 6 p.m. And thank you. That's been a little update, but here we go with the grapevine. New phone scams impacting the incarcerated individuals. The Federal Bureau of Prisons has been alerted of a scam impacting incarcerated individuals and their families where callers are identifying themselves as federal BOP employees to secure money for community placement services. The Federal Bureau of Prisons will not contact individuals to request personal information or money. Also, there appears to be other scams affecting incarcerated individuals and their families. Specifically, callers are identifying themselves as Federal Bureau of Prisons Reentry Division Services to gain personal information or money for early release or community placement services. Individuals who are contacted by persons purporting to be employees of the Federal Bureau of Prison requesting money and or compensation should report these calls to the Federal Trade Commission online or the FBI. They just me hustling the guys and they're already in the joint. Also, there's been something I didn't even know, and I thought I was well informed. In the United States, only four states currently allow conjugal visits: California, Connecticut, New York, and Washington. Federal and maximum security prisoners do not. The federal and maximum security prisoners do not are not permitted to participate in the conjugal program. I thought I was on top of stuff. I don't know how that slipped by me. Four states allow conjugal visits. Thousands of National Guard members still standing in for COs at New York prisons. A massive walkout by security staff in New York prison system in mid-February drove Governor Kathy Hochul to take drastic measures. She deployed thousands of National Guard troops, over 6,500, into the prison system to take place of striking correctional officers. 7 weeks later, the strike is over, but more than 3,000 guards members are still on prison duty, partly because of how the 22-day crisis ended. State officials fired some 2,000 correctional officers and sergeants who failed to return to their jobs by March 10th, deepening the staff shortage that helped fuel the walkout. The initial guard activation was mandatory, meaning anyone who was called up had to go. The state later awarded a bonus to make the assignment more palatable. On top of their active duty pay and housing allowances, the deployed troops were given an extra $2,000 each two-week pay period and an additional $4,000 per month to maintain and staff and operate the prisons in New York City, in New York State. Report. Prison libraries braced for staffing and program cuts after the IMLS funding laws. The Institute of Museum and Library Services. Correction facilities in several states are facing program disruptions following the termination of funding from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, a federal agency that has supported prison libraries for decades. According to the Washington State Library, the termination of Institute of Museum and Library Services funding may result in fewer open hours and reduced programming at prison libraries. In the past, libraries staffed by a single librarian would close when an employee was absent. The IMLS grant had helped expand staffing to prevent that from happening. The Illinois Department of Correction received $420,000 in IMLS grants in 2023 to support libraries at 28 correctional facilities. Folks, this is serious. We've already had over 50,000 books banned in prison. Now, what books are available, you won't have access to them. You can't get out your cells and go to the library. And if you're in your cell, that was the only thing you had was the books. Now, the books being banned, what books are available are not accessible to those men and women who are currently confined. Man, that is something. Also, that's what we call jiggy boogie. Jacksonville police identified 9 officers removed from jail duties after the injury of an inmate who died. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office released the initial incident report on what happened inside the Duval County Jail on Monday, April 7th, that later led to 1 inmate's death and 9 correction employees being removed from their positions and stripped of their correctional authority. Folks, we just had last month, an inmate was killed in New York by 14 guards. Now in Florida, this is happening all over the country, just like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Mike Brown. Guards are killing inmates inside the institution. You don't hear about this as much as on the 6 o'clock news and when somebody is a civilian who is killed. But what's happening to these men and women in these institutions is just as deadly inside as it is outside. It ain't just on the inmates. The correctional staffs are killing inmates. This is the second major killing in 60 days within the prison system. So stay tuned and alert, and we'll keep informed of what's going on. And that's been, well, we also, wait a minute before we go, I just want to say that Pearl Murphy gave a show, a jazz show, where she honored 4 Black female singers, and she had a band called the Nasa Band. Pearl, I didn't know you sung like that. I've been knowing you since the Harambe House days. Lady, you knocked it out the box. And that trio that you had, the Nasa Band, boy, them, Ed Murphy called it, that guy was tickling what he would call what. He was doing what we call tickling the ivories. I hadn't heard anybody to tickle them ivories the way he tickled. So that was a beautiful program. And also last week, we went to Joe Murray's party, Joe and his wife, Marita Golden, an author. And baby, they had a beautiful party and something that touched my heart. A little 8-year-old boy walked over to me, grabbed my hand, and wouldn't turn me loose. I didn't know he had was autistic. But me and this little kid connected, man, and I felt so special and warm. And he introduced me to all the other kids, and he grabbed my hand and put my hand in 4 or 5 other little kids' hands, like this is his friend. And that was a beautiful evening. So to Joe Murray's birthday party and Marita Golden, thank you all for a beautiful party. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Thank you, Mike. Now we will get to what we call our show. The topic is update and status on D.C. prisoners in the Bureau of Prisons. Our guest this morning is Reverend Donald Isaac, Corrections Information Council. He's the director. And Ms. Nicole Ukebu, is that correct, Donald? your cable. I had difficulty with names.
Nicole.
You got to forgive me. I'm going to thank y'all both for joining us. Donald Isaac and I go back over 30, 40 years. And the reason why we got in here is that he's been working just as hard as Tyrone Parker and I. He's been working over 40 years with the South East of the River Police, Clergy Police Community Partnership. He's worked with Fourth Services, Offender Supervision Agency. Donald had a house about 25, 30 years ago that we used to go and see. This man has been on the front line, and he's working as a director of the Correction Information Council. And their duty is to monitor, report on conditions in the Bureau of Prisons as it pertains to D.C. code prisoners. His office was enacted by an act of Congress, which says that they have the responsibility to go to in prisons all over the country. And believe me, Reverend Isaac and his staff have been all over the prison to most of the federal correctional system to see how our folk are being treated in those facilities all over the country. And they've given out reports. And I wanted the inside information from somebody who knows the prison from the inside, who goes in on a regular basis. Because we get a lot of stories about how our people are being treated, not being treated, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to say thank you for coming on, Reverend Isaac, and Ms. Nicole Ukebu. I have difficulty with them African names. Even though I'm African, I can't spell my own name, young lady. Thank you for joining. And she's assistant.
No problem.
Deputy director.
She's executive deputy director. Well, y'all got two of them, assistant deputy director and the director. So good morning to both of you, Donald and Nicole. Welcome to Crossroads.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning to you both. Glad to be here.
Good morning. Before we start, I just want to say that it's not where you've been, it's what you've done. And what this gentleman done, Reverend Donald Isaac, I know his father. I know his father when Donald was a little teeny twerk. But I ain't but 35, Donald. I don't know. You figure that out, would you?
Well, let me say that, first of all, I'm glad to be here because you are usually I'm the elder at the table, but when I sit with you, I'm my colleague, but one who I look up to. And let me just say, first of all, thank you for the work that you and your wife do in the city on behalf of particularly incarcerated populations, but in the city overall. So as just two things, well, as is kind of setting this up. First is a point of correction. You know, when I thought about coming, I remember that Nikichi is your co-producer, and she is also a board member for the Corrections Information Council.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I forgot it myself that she was with you. So, but Nikichi and I actually met, and I shouldn't say this because I'm really dating her, but it was over 50 years ago.
Wow.
I don't even think she was a graduate of college. She was doing work, and both of us were doing work, international issues, particularly at that time with the freedom of Nelson Mandela and other issues in South Africa. So that was just something I thought about, the length of time. And as you indicate,
yeah,
you know that we have been connected over four decades as well, specifically around,
yes, the, yes,
around the issues of reentry. So I just thought I would kind of say that as context. And the other thing is to just introduce to the group and to the airways and to kind of help make her way a little easy, because, you know, this is a family setting. Nicole Ukebu, who is the deputy director of the Corrections Information Council. Thank you for giving us an audience to come and talk about our agency and the work that we do and how it can benefit or citizens, but also in families, but also if there are questions for us. And I think the first meeting that I had, well, the third time that I was with you, counting back this to third, was with Kareem.
That's right. Yes.
And Kareem, because I believed in having a person with lived experience. And, you know, Kareem spent a good portion of his life, over 25 years, incarcerated, and now works at the CIC. And then the next person that I brought was Nyella Sebron, who was chief of staff. So she was a person who works with Kareem on inspections. So they actually go out and do those inspections, both at the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
When you say inspection, they mean they go inside of prisons, federal prisons, and inspect the federal prisons.
Absolutely, yeah. And they lead the team. The whole office goes at various times, but when you got into Kareem and you have Nyella, you kind of have the core persons who kind of facilitate them and lead them actually on the ground inside the prisons, talking to the officials, but also talking to the men and women who are residents and district residents inside of these prisons. And then today, and I'm going to let you go, I just wanted to say for Nicole, and then Nicole, who is really the one person, one professional staff person who I inherited that I did not hire, but is just a great person, is trained as an attorney at Howard University, was at the office when I came, and kind of orchestrates much of the internal processes. So she's one who kind of touches all of the reports, kind of make sure they comply with our style guide and things of that nature, and who is really a great person to have on the phone to answer all the questions with you as well. So I just wanted to do that to introduce her to you formally and to make her feel
Yes, free. Yes. Feel
free to talk as she sees fit. Okay.
Okay, Nicole, you want to go ahead, Nicole, you got it. You want to tell us exactly what the Correctional Information Council is, what its role and function is, so our listeners can be informed as to what questions they might want to ask. Oh, yeah, at the half sure. hour. Go ahead. Go ahead, Nicole.
Sure. Just a point of correction. Although I did attend Howard University, I did graduate from UDC Law School. So, okay. You know, shout out to them.
UDC Firebirds.
But I am in my advice.
So give us a little rundown. What's the role, right. purpose, and function of CIC? Yes, go ahead, you got it.
Yes, I would say that our role is can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, we got you.
Okay, hello?
Yes.
We got you.
Oh, okay, good. So we're a research and information council. What we try to do is bridge the gaps in communication between administratives and executives at the different facilities and the people who are actually residents of those facilities. We go into the different institutions. We're responsible for the 122 BOP facilities, wherever our residents are located as DC code offenders. People have been sentenced out of Superior Court. And then we also go down to Department of Corrections, and we look at and talk to the people who reside at the Central Detention Facility and a Correctional Treatment Facility, as well as Central Cell Block. So based on the information that we retain by looking at not only the conditions of confinement, but speaking directly to the people within those facilities, we're able to develop reports that contain a lot of different information on various topics. And we examine various topics from general housing conditions to medical and mental health conditions to people who are in the SHU, to programming and educational opportunities, access to religious accommodations, and just anything that we hear, we try to take that, consolidate it, put it in a format to where it can be communicated to executives, and they could kind of take those things into consideration as they develop their own policies and internal protocols within those places.
Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm just laughing. Go ahead. Don't pay me no mind. Hello.
Yes, no problem. In addition to that, not only do we do... Yeah, in addition to that, not only do we do inspections, so we produce those inspections reports, but then we also synthesize data. So we have thematic reports, which will address different issues that we see either widespread throughout the community or things that are kind of on brand for certain points of the year, like voting, for example, might be an issue. We have thematic reports on our website, and we would just encourage anybody who's listening to check out the Corrections Information Council website, because we have inspection reports there with various places we've gone to. We have thematic reports that kind of address specific topics. We have information sheets, which kind of give you data on the various demographics within the different institutions, and any type of kind of numerical data you may be seeking is there. And we also have a monthly newsletter where we have a nice data corner that gives you a snapshot of recent numbers and upcoming events within the community. So, you know, if anyone's listening, if you have any events that are coming up within the next few weeks or the next few months, please send that information to our email inbox, because we would love to kind of publicize it through our newsletter.
You know, we like to be on your email list. And secondly, let me back up a minute. Donna, you said that y'all go into institutions. Folk who are listening, the Correction Information Council has been mandated by Congress to report, inspect, and monitor how DC code prisoners are being treated within the federal system. And your recommendations and reports are turned into who get the reports after you go to a prison and you talk to the correctional staff and you talk to some of the residents there. Also, about that question is, Kareem McCraney, the gentleman you had that did that over 27 years, he was in, and they allow him back into the prisons to be a part of the inspection team as a former resident.
And you know, as I know, that's, I mean, short of a miracle.
That's what it is.
We are provided that grace. Let me also just first give Nicole a shout out and say this, because she's Howard undergrad, and I have to repent for overlooking UDC Firebirds Law School, as where she's come from, because you know, as I do, it's history. Yeah. With regard to the Antioch School.
Yeah, that's where it started from, yeah.
Evolved over to that. So it has a certain stint, a certain perspective that it brings to the table with regard to helping the poor and the disadvantaged. And I just wanted to kind of reinforce that. You're right. You know, so they let Kareem in. And the only way we can explain that is, you know, if you look at it in an isolated event, you would say that it was a miracle. You can't explain it.
Yes.
However, I today hold this prescription or hold this perspective that even though things are the state that they are and could be called the worst of times, I think we're also living in the best of times. This whole issue of prison reform and prison oversight, I think, is just at a new level of intensity. And things are happening that you could never explain before. And I just say, right, I think I'm leave it alone. I just left a peer learning group that had 17 other executive directors who are now have oversight entities for their state prisons in their respective states.
Right.
You know, for so many years, you know, we only had John Howard and the Correctional Association of New York that had been established for years.
Yeah.
But there weren't any other things going on. But I think that now we see, to sit in that room, I just thought, what kind of how significant this is to see young persons, professional, unprofessional, legally trained people who had lived experience, who now go in prisons and do oversight. And many of them have unannounced inspection rights. And when you combine that with
what's that mean? What is oversight inspection rights? What does that mean?
That they can go into the prison.
How much advance notice do you need to give them before they go?
Right across the line in Maryland, they have just established a commission, and it can go into the prison and they can do unannounced inspections. And she prided herself that her unannounced was, she knocked on the door and say, "I'm here, let me in." Now, you know, we have unannounced inspections with this Department of Corrections, and we give them 12-hour notice. You know, because we implemented this, that we would try that. We don't tell them where we're going to go. We don't tell them what we're going to look at or anything, but we just say we'll be there tomorrow morning. I think in the federal government, you know, the Inspector General's office now has been given unannounced inspection rights for BOP. Mm-hmm. And I think their inspection, right, they said they give 8-hour notices, you know, to just kind of let the people know. And they said for the same reason we did it, for administrative purposes, they give that notice, and for safety reasons to kind of coordinate a few things. But yeah. I think those things, as you know, are unheard of with regard to corrections.
And sure. You know, when you said that, one of the things that that hit me, we had a young lady who worked for us. I think I called you a few years ago about it, Dr. Rev. She was incarcerated in the Federal Bureau of Prisons for 10 years, and the son been in for 20. And she's been denied the right to visit her son because she was a former inmate. So we know how hard they play if you were in there coming out and out. Trying to get back in is a problem. The issue is that we've been dealing with is that this is this oversight committee. We've been trying to get something like Correction Information Council for years now. You know that for 20, 30 years, that somebody that had the right or the responsibility to go inside the correction facilities and walk in and check and see what's going on and report on the status of our residents from D.C. who are housed there. One of the cases that we had, Reverend Ralph, is a guy named Kevin Flight. Are you familiar with that case? He came out in January of last year, and he was disabled, handicapped, and his family called up to the prison to see if they can escort him or come up and ride back with him. And then somehow they lost a connection, and they put the guy on the bus, and he couldn't ride. He was just disabled, had difficulty seeing, couldn't walk, etc. Anyway, they put him on the bus. The family went to Union Station, and he never got off. So they went back up the line and took and looked at all the videos every time the bus stopped, and they didn't see no picture of him getting off of the bus. This went on. So for 2 months, the family couldn't find him. He was releasing, had no medication. He was helpless, homeless, had all kinds of mental and physical illnesses. And for 2 months, the family couldn't find him. He called the FBI, everybody, and they didn't know what happened to Kevin Flight. One day, his mother got on the Metro bus, and she walked down the aisle. She looked over and saw her son. He had done like 18 or 20 years, and she found him sitting on the bus lost. So they came to us. We put it on the air, and the thing was the guy didn't get no medication, and we know there's a case that you're familiar with called Gamo versus Estelle, where people in prison are the only ones that have a constitutional right to medical care. And these guys are being released without medical care. What are some of the medical issues that y'all are facing with men, Donovan, me and your father was together? And I used to walk through streets and talk. And back in our day, when we got released, they gave me 30-day supply of medication. And until you had 30 days to try to connect with a medical provider or physician or whatever. And in that 30-day time, you can get it. But now they got men and women being released without ample supply of medication when they're coming out. So what's y'all take on that? What kind of medical situation have y'all run into that you report on to say we need to improve this or look at this more closely to see what can be done? Because men after 30, 40 years in prison, they don't have no medical insurance. They don't have no doctor to go to. So they're thrown in the street and they can't even get medication because the prescriptions are too expensive. So have y'all run into any medical situation like this? And if so, have you made a difference in it?
Nicole, you can go ahead. Start off.
So I would say that I haven't heard that particular case, but I do know that we ask questions about people and their what they're supposed to be provided upon release. And they are in fact supposed to be getting certain medical prescriptions to take with them. And so I would say that in situations like that, if you're having situations where people are not getting what they're supposed to, please call our agency and let us know, because we want to be able to track those types of trends and communicate them at the executive level. Another thing is that, I guess our agency, like I said, we track things and we look at like widespread conditions. Like, we're not so much involved in like individual and personal circumstances. However, if we're noticing things that definitely need to be addressed, we try to point people in a direction of specific resources. So I know like there are different resources throughout the city, like the Mayor's Office on Return to Citizens Affairs can kind of help with those case management services in order to get people, point people in a direction of different things that they might need. The Ready Center is another good resource where they have people on site who can kind of help people with, you know, their access to medication, you know, access to mental and medical health, access to getting certain licenses and different types of identification. And so if we can't directly help with a specific situation, we try to point people into towards those resources that do more case management services.
You know, Walker, the mayor's office of return and says, Donna, when you had your house on the second or third street over in Southeast?
Yes, sir.
I was the first. Yeah, I was the first director of marketing. I created marketing. It took me 4 years fighting the city council and the mayor's office for Marienburg. Finally, recognized the need of having an executive office in have an office in within the executive branch of the government, primarily and specifically dealing with folks incarcerated and the returnees. So, for the first 5 years, I was the first director of marketing back in the 90s. So, and that's what, and Donna, man, we've been doing this for 40, 50 years. And it hurts, man, because things don't seem to be getting no better. And I know you was on First Street. I like that apartment you had. In fact, I tried to get in there, but you wouldn't let me in there, Donald. You know, what apartment building you had over there for returning citizens. I said, man, let me in. Anyway, we go back so far, man. That's what I said at the beginning of the show. It ain't what you've done. Is what you've become. And I'm proud of what you're doing. And we need to let our listeners know that you don't deal with individual cases. That they give you information, you can take that information and direct it to the proper resources. But this information helps you with your report, and you can monitor what's on top of that. We needed this for years. We've been trying to have somebody with oversight of the correctional system, because at the top of the show, we just mentioned about the gentleman who was killed in Florida, the gentleman who was killed up in New York by correctional staff. And this has happened all over the country. We don't see it as much on the news as we do when they kill somebody like George Floyd or Breonna Taylor. But these situations happen. So we got a voice. Well, we got somebody you could turn to. You want to give them the phone number? This is a break.
I do. This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. The call-in number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We want to remind you, D.C. Emancipation Day, speak out. Tomorrow evening at Metropolitan AME Church, come have dinner at 5:30. The program begins at 6. Roach is one of the speakers on the panel. Come out and let your voice be heard. And next Friday night, WPFW is celebrating 48 years. And still we rise. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be poetry, singing, dancing, of course, at Martin's Crosswinds. 6:30 next Friday, April 25th. You can go online at WPFW, get your tickets. Or call the number I just gave you, 202-588-0893.
And that's been a little brief update. Donna, so much I want to talk to you both about, and I want our listeners to be able to call in with questions, information, because when I mentioned the case of the young girl, a friend of ours who was a return to citizens, and she did 10 years in the women's division in the BOP, and she can't see her son. Do y'all have similar cases like that coming down the pike? Well, because the mother was confined or the father was confined, you're not allowed to go back to that prison or to a prison to see your loved ones because you were incarcerated. Have y'all dealt with that issue? How does that issue come up in your reports?
Well, that wouldn't be a report issue as much as I call that in the realm of
work. I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of technical difficulties. Okay, go ahead, Dr. Isaac.
Yeah, I was saying I was saying that's not as much a report issue as we have a function that we feel in terms we call it customer relations or family relations, mm-hmm. where families who have specific issues, we do the best that we can to inform them with regard to the rights, responsibilities, and services that are available. We also track those types of things, because if they say things, we have a off-the-shelf data system that we actually track all calls that we get about complaints at the respective institutions that inform us, one, of what are the issues that people are concerned with, but it also kind of gives us an idea about the quality of life in those respective institutions. Let me even go back, Roach, to the issue about medical care. Because and not going back to saying that even though we still have a long way to go, I think there are a number of developments that are significant. And as I indicated, what, you know, the Federal Prison Oversight Act has now mandated that the Inspector General must do, I think, I don't even know what the number, 6 to 8 inspections in every fiscal year. I think the most recent report that they did was probably around the end of the calendar year or the beginning of this year, December or January, and it was on medical issues. And it identified, you know, and again, this was, again, we haven't had that, but they call it either the IG or ombudsman who actually go in and they talk about the staffing shortages. They talk about the medical challenges, or the medication challenges. They talk about, you know, just a number of other issues that relate to the operation, the shortage in particular in the medical department, of not having qualified people, you know, to really do work there. Just some of the things that I just think of. But I just want to say that because that now is another set of eyes.
Yes, yes. Prisons.
And we're going to talk even as the OIC, how can we coordinate with those efforts, integrate with those efforts, use that information, and maybe even begin to do something jointly, because, you know, they have a much broader mandate.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll just say about that, because I think the last time I remember, the BOP's numbers are what, somewhere between 34,000-35,000. And I think our number, if I'm not mistaken, usually hovers around, you know, less than 2,000. I'll just say that.
So yeah,
it's a very microscopic number with regard to the total population. The last thing I'll say, because I see the chairman just texted me and reminded me there, but you know that they now have a new BOP director.
Yeah, Bill Martin.
Yeah, the guy from West Virginia, you know, who has been said to be a strong advocate of good law and order, as he was said in his appointed documents. The interesting thing about that is that we are in month four of the president's administration, and he has appointed a new BOP director.
Yeah.
It took much longer than that under the last administration to even get the director there. And I should add that, if, you know, that was and I'll just say it this way, not to be too personalizing it. And these directors, when they come in, have a big challenge because the BOP is such an institutionalized bureaucracy. And usually people go from the ground up. And when you come from the outside, it's very, very difficult.
Yes.
Because I'll just say this, the last Trump appointee with last year, in his last term, I think, was an Army major, you know, who stayed only 8 months,
yeah,
you know, because of the bureaucracy and the frustration. And so anyway, I just wanted to kind of say those are some of the developments that we have to keep a fresh set of eyes. You know, I mean, I don't want us to get caught living in, you know, the problem. This is what I say, and I'm through. Don't become so overwhelmed by the problems that we miss the progress.
I like it. We got a caller on the line. We'll take our first caller. You're on the line. Caller, question or comment?
I have a comment. Good morning.
Can you hear me? Good morning.
Okay. Let me first say Merry Christmas, because I know that's the slogan.
We're happy Groundhog Day to you, Surgeon. Okay, come on.
What I wanted to bring attention to, I have a friend who just did 3 years in a federal prison, and he's in a halfway house now. And when he was in the prison, he worked in the kitchen. And I want to know, when it comes to the inspections, where are we? Are we close to exposing these things? There's a lady named Jessica Kent and many others who exposing the boxes of food that's coming into the prisons, marked on the box, the city zoo, and it says not for human consumption. Now, if you are what you eat, why is this being allowed for our prisoners, our people, to be fed food that's marked for not human consumption. And like he said, he worked in the kitchen. He said it was mostly the meat. And how is this being allowed? And it's marked for the city zoo. And how is this being allowed to be in our prisons being fed to the prisoners?
That's interesting.
That's my comment.
Go ahead. All right, Donald or Nicole, y'all want to try that? Either one.
Yeah, I would just say that food is definitely a concern. We hear lots of commentary about what people are eating and how much they should be getting or be entitled to. We've communicated those issues. And, you know, oftentimes the response is they have specific vendors who have specific metrics that are, and the food is kind of pre-portioned and pre-allocated to give people a specific amount of calories and what they need in terms of sustainability. However, we do recognize those concerns, and we've been diligent about communicating those things when we go inside of these facilities. One thing I would like to say is that in situations where you feel like people are given things that are marked not for human consumption and things of that nature, please contact our agency and make us aware of those things so that we can specifically try to lay a more focused eye on those concerns, because we need to know about them in order to be able to take a deeper dive into that when we're going in and out of these places. So I would say to the caller, please call our number. We can be reached at 202-478-9211. We have an extremely competent staff who's willing to talk to you and take down any issues and concerns you may have, because as Director Isaac mentioned, we put all of this information into our database, and this is what helps us kind of determine where we're going next. We're a small agency with a large mandate, and we do our best to kind of lay eyes on those places that have these significant issues. So yes, we don't want people having food that's marked not for human consumption, but again, our...
Are you still there? With some technical difficulties.
Yeah, that number again is 202.
Go and see what is in fact factual and kind of change, move things in a positive direction.
Let me throw this out. I know that food has always been a big issue forever in all prisons. Have you got any complaints about food that you all put in your report, or you did what you had to do, and you took a deeper dive, and you had improvement, or you can notice an improvement based on your involvement and your participation in bringing this to the right authorities' attention? Have y'all got any response or any successes in terms of those folk who complain about food in the federal system that you or your agency have dove into to see that is corrected?
Not that I'm really aware of on a significant level, especially when you say on the federal level. I can say on the district level, we have focused on the issue of food. We've evaluated contracts. They got a new vendor. The DC Council has passed some new laws with regard to what should be on the menu. As a gentleman said, we are what we eat. It's trying to be more conscientious about that. And that's even ongoing in that regard.
Yeah.
So that we are still trying to do additional surveys and follow-ups. And that's on the DC level. On the federal level, it's a much bigger issue and a much more difficult issue for us to try to monitor any more effectively than we've been doing.
That's right, because you got a small staff. Let me ask you this. We've got a few calls here at the station when the January 6th folk were in the DC jail, and we got complaints or calls that they were being treated differently. They had food catered to them, brought inside from outside. They could stay up late at night, look at the TV, and et cetera. And these folks, most of them, back in virtually all of them were white, and they segregated them or put them into a separate cell block. Did y'all get any complaints or information about how the January 6th defendants were treated at the DC jail?
We go back and forth, Nicole. I want to keep you engaged. Cut your camera off to your set. Might be better. Go ahead. You can go first.
Okay.
No, I was going to say, And I apologize, I am having a little bit of technical difficulties with going in and out hearing some of the questions, but I think I heard enough of it. I would say that when we're going into places, you know, people may notice things and make mention of January 6th folks and, you know, particular grievances as far as differences in treatment. However, I think the issue more so pertains to, like people's individual circumstances when we're going in and out of these places.
Yes.
Like they're more so concerned about what they have going on. You know, we're hearing things, especially like at the federal system, where people want more access to like their their unit teams, like more communication with them.
Yes, yes.
We're hearing a lot of complaints about the different lockdowns at facilities where, you know, people are being forced to like stay inside of their cells for extended periods of time. And it's going on for like weeks and weeks. And months,
yes, yes.
Especially in facilities where you have staffing shortages. And I, you know, this is like a nationwide issue where,
yes,
you know, problems with acquiring and retaining competent, qualified, and frankly, people who want to do the work, staff within institutions is a challenge everywhere. So, you know, when you have these types of issues, it's going to impact the residents of those facilities because of the lockdown. So we hear a lot of people talking about that and, you know, just wanting to kind of have more access to recreation or the ability to kind of move about. We're hearing more information on people wanting access to programs and programs that they feel like will be beneficial to them to have skills when they get out. Because, you know, even with some of these programs that seem to be really desirable, like challenge programs or the a residential drug abuse program, where they're kind of giving them those skills that are transferable, where you could use out in the world to help cope and navigate real life scenarios, they're like long wait lists. So people are concerned about that and their access to be able to get into those programs. And, you know, also when people have grievances within the facilities, they want to be able to ensure that they can communicate their concern and be guaranteed an effective response. And so we hear some complaints about the delays with responding to grievances. And so, you know, when we hear about these things, programming, lockdowns, oh, and let me back up for a second. Another issue with the whole lockdowns is that oftentimes we get family members calling us and talking about the fact that they travel X amount of miles,
yes,
distance of miles, to go see their loved ones in these places, and they're unable to visit them because once they set foot on the ground, maybe the institution is on lockdown. And that's pretty much what it is. There's nothing you can do about that. So these are things that we're hearing, and we do consolidate them and we take them, and we're trying to, you know, talk at the executive level to see what can or cannot be done in order to remedy some of these issues. I don't want to keep on going, but I would like to just add one more thing. We recently sent in a legislative booklet to try to help offenders become aware of different legislation that might be applicable to them. So we've been getting a lot of calls about clarifying expectations for that. First Step Act is a way in which the prisoners or the residents of those facilities are able to get some credit towards their sentence in order to get reductions. And people are waiting, if they are a DC code offender, to get access to those credits. And so we've been communicating at the executive level to monitor that progress. We can share that they have completed like a specific part of the process to compare the crimes from the, you know, more local to federal level. But next, they have to kind of develop the program and in order to disseminate the information throughout the various institutions. So we are monitoring those things that kind of matter to people as they are, you know, experiencing these conditions directly every day. And I feel like that's more of what we're hearing.
Okay. You know, one of the things that I got a lot of things. One of them is that we seen quite a few guys, rare, who got released after 30, 40, 50 years, and they come in the street and they die. They don't have a home, job, or employment. Affordable housing is a key issue all over the country for all reentry. And when a guy come out, then he'd been locked up for 40, the guy been locked up 50 years, he go down and see his caseworker and ask him what's his employment prospects. The guy's 70 years old, never had a job in his life. And they ask him what's his employment prospects, and he never had a job. So we got folks coming out, man, without no visible means of support, no financial assistance whatsoever. And I don't know if you heard of this, Rev, but there's a word going around called prison side, where guys are committing suicide via going back to prison because they can't adjust or make it out here. And everybody they knew is dead, and they can't stay in a house because it's a public housing unit. And depending on where they are, they may or may not can stay in there. And they got the law saying if somebody in the house with a criminal record, you can't be in the house with a criminal record. And you've been gone 40 years, so you don't have nowhere to go. We've been dealing with this housing crisis, Rev. It is a monster. And we got folks right now sleeping in the streets, under the subways and cars and cabs. I know this is not your bailiwick, but I wanted to, and this issue has arisen within your reports and stuff, and guys you talk to from the streets and inside are saying, we need jobs, we need housing. Because we don't have a halfway house in D.C., except for one, and that's for women. We're one of the few states or jurisdictions, rather, who don't have a halfway house without men, and they got to go to Baltimore or to Richmond. So we get, man, your plate is running over with issues. And I'm glad that it got somebody like you who've been in the trenches for the last 40, 45 years, and it can't pull the wool over your eyes. So what is it, man, that we can do, what our listeners can do, for those men and women coming out who got no place to stay, nothing, nowhere to go? You had a house over there on 1st Street, man, and I take my hat off, Jay. That was like 20. I don't know, was that 30 years ago, Raymond Osley? That's
more
30?
Like, more like 20. You keep trying to make me say it.
You're older than me.
It was really around 2013.
See, Dan, you've been doing this for decades, man. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted you on. We wanted somebody who's been on the front line, who's knowledgeable, who's informed, and that over there, who's believable. I can believe you, man. And I don't get that jiggy boogie of do this and I'll take care. I don't want that. I don't want no jiggy boogie.
Let me see. I was going
to
ask.
We got 3 minutes. I'm sorry. We're running out of time. You want to give some closing remarks, Reverend Isaac, and then Nicole?
Get that number again.
I do.
Go ahead.
I was going to let her give the phone number, Nicole, then I'll wrap up.
Yes.
The phone number is 202-478-9211. 478-9211.
Thank you.
And we can be, and also email is great for us. We monitor our inbox is dccic@dc.gov.
That's easy.
And really quickly, I would like to say, check out YouTube, Google, type in Corrections Information Council and watch our documentary, Ira Creating Hope.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're here with the closing remarks, Reverend Donald Hazard.
No, we just think, I think we've done a lot. I mean, you know, as you say, there's a very wide range of issues. And I just close by just reinforcing the point that you made, because I know that was going to come up. This issue of persons who have been in prison 20, 25 plus years, who are eligible to come out, on their lobby, or there are people lobbying for them to come out. But when they come out, there's no support. It goes back to almost how we began to reshape reentry about 25 years ago when I personally felt that there was enough emphasis on people going into prison to do work and support people, this, that, other, but we needed to build systems for people once they got out.
Yes.
We're kind of seeing that recycle again now, in the sense that there are just tremendous needs for this population that we have to build more capacity to really get there. And housing and jobs are at the top of the list.
There you go. All right.
I just want to throw out that we just heard that the Chateau is opening again this Friday. The Chateau, Friday night.
Okay, we want to thank our guests. for joining us this morning. Reverend Donald Isaac, Executive Director of the Corrections Information Council, and Nicole Ukebu, Executive Deputy Director of the Corrections Information Council. And y'all got our good friend down there, Charles Thornton. And y'all got people down there, man, who I know I can believe. And people that do what they say they're going to do and don't leave you hanging. So I want to thank our guests for coming in this morning. Reverend Isaac, you'll be back. You've been on before. And we're going to have you back again and again and again. And you too. And you too, Nicole. So thank you for keeping our information out, people informed. Remember, this is Crossroads. Your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
To my knees and pray. Come, Jesus, come. Let today be the day. Sometimes I feel like I'm. But I'm holding on to a hope that won't fade.
How we gonna make reparations wise? Educate, organize. How we gonna make reparations wise? Educate.
Reparations Valley, Saturday, May 17th, a festival of unity and celebration of the ongoing quest for reparations, as well as the 100th anniversary of the birth of Malcolm X. Speakers include Michael Eric Dyson, Robin Ruth Simmons, O'Malley Yeshitela, Ajua Ayatoro, with virtual remarks from Marilana Karenga, actress Erica Alexander, and Ben Chavis. Performers include the rapper Razzcaz, along with DC's own Ayanna Gregory, Afi Soul, Lucy Murphy, Nana Malaya, and the Malcolm X dancers and drummers, Free Benjamin, Randy Payton, and Laini Mataka. May 17th, Landsberg Park, 1098 Delaware Avenue, Southwest, 11 a.m.
How we gonna make reparations wise? Educate, educate, organize. How we gonna make reparations wise?
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th, 7 to 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt. Entertainment includes Navasha Daya and more. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at wpfwfm.org.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, with an important announcement regarding a national town hall meeting. Report card on Trump, the first 100 days, strategies for resistance and transformation. Friday, April 25th, 7 o'clock p.m. sharp, at the historic Shiloh Baptist Church, 1500 9th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m. sharp. Speakers include noted political economist Dr. Julianne Malvo, the NAACP's Hillary Shelton, National Urban League's Tara Murray, Diedrich Muhammad from the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, and Mel Foote from the Constituency for Africa. There will also be an open mic for you and the audience to share your assessment of Trump and the way forward. For further information, IBW21.org. That's IBW21.org.
Greetings, family. This Wednesday, April 16th, friends, neighbors, and comrades from all across the Washington area will assemble at Metropolitan AME Church for a D.C. Emancipation Day speak out to strategize, organize, and mobilize from 5:30 until 9 p.m. The event, Standing Together to Fight the Power, presented by the Metropolitan Washington Council, AFL-CIO, and the Federal Unionist Network, together with Harriet's Wildest Dreams, Free DC, The Washington Informer, and WPFW, will center how the community can protect DC home rule, save federal jobs and services, and support the city's most vulnerable neighborhoods. Metropolitan AME Church is located at 1518 M Street Northwest in DC. Details at wpfwfm.org and freedcproject.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, I'm Dave Zirin,
host of WPFW's The Collision, with an editorial. Mahmoud Khalil, a student at Columbia University and a U.S. permanent resident, has been illegally detained by ICE for organizing against the U.S.-supported genocide in Palestine. In detaining Khalil, the Trump administration, the State Department, and the Department of Homeland Security have made clear that they are more than willing to violate constitutionally protected rights to punish those who speak out against them and Israel's war on the people of Gaza. This is a deeply alarming development. It is a march towards authoritarianism. It is a blatant encroachment on our democracy, and it places all of us in peril.